What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
Greetings, colleagues, and welcome to the Defocus Media Podcast. It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover. And believe it or not, today I actually have my favorite optometrist on the line with me. So I'm super excited about our guest today. Our guest, you've seen him all over the internet. He's well known throughout the optometric industry. Friends and family, I'd like to welcome our friend, our colleague, Dr. Adam Ramsey. Dr. Ramsey, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, Daryl. Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, man. You know, I have two favorite optometrists in the world. You know, you're one of them. And the other one is Dr. Jennifer Lyerly. So, you know, it's great to finally get you on the show. I know we were waiting for the right time, and this is definitely the right time because you have a lot of great things going on right now.
Yeah, man, I am a long-time listener, first-time guest. You know, that's what they say back in the day on the radio. yeah, man, we've been trying to get on here, and I felt like this is the big time. If I make it onto this podcast, I've made it to the big time. So I wanted to make sure that when I came strong and I had something of value to share with all your listeners. So I made sure that, you know, when I dropped this book, you were the first podcast I got on. Because I've listened to every single episode you and Jen have done, and it's been wonderful for me to learn, and I figure I'll take some of that information that I've learned, put it into action, and go for it.
I'm pretty sure everyone knows you, but for those who do not know who you are, just give us a little background of who Dr. Adam Ramsey is. Where did you go to school at? Where do you live? Family, you know, all that jazz so the world can know.
Okay. So I was born in Trinidad in the Caribbean. And I grew up in Broward, Fort Lauderdale area. I went to University of Florida for undergrad. And then I went to Southern College of Optometry in Memphis for optometry school. Graduated from Memphis and decided I wanted to come back to the warm weather of South Florida. And got down here and hit the ground running as soon as I got here, man. I was ready, man. I was energetic, man. I always loved the business of optometry. And when I got here, I wanted to get my hands in as much of it as I can.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know you love the business of optometry. Anytime I have a question about anything business-wise related to optometry, you know, I'm always hitting you up on a text or WhatsApp, depending on where I'm at. And you always, for some reason, have an answer for me, which is great. And I must say, every time you're right about it. So, I mean, you know your stuff for sure. With that being said, you also have a private practice, correct?
Yeah. So I opened up Socialite Vision in 2016. It has been a labor of love. I've loved every minute of it, opening up warm. And about a year after opening, I also opened up 3 satellite locations on Indian reservations. So I went from 1 to 4 locations pretty quickly. And it's been a kind of crash course. You learn a lot when you grow that fast. And I have worked in every industry. So from graduation, I've worked in commercial. I've worked for an ophthalmologist. I've worked in private practices. I've worked on Indian reservations. I've worked everywhere. So I've gotten a little bit. I do some talks for industry. So I've kind of getting a little flavor of everything. So that's what my from 2012 to now has afforded me the opportunity to really dabble in a lot of stuff. So my knowledge kind of goes a little further than most people and most doctors my age, just because I've done so much in a short amount of time. And, I don't really need as much sleep. I kind of hustle. I go for it. And I feel like, you know, we all got 24 hours in the day. You know, how we utilize it is what separates the different doctors out there. So I just wanted to get out there and go for it.
You know, I think that's why you're very successful, Adam. I mean, you don't sleep. I mean, I know I text you sometimes 4 or 5 in the morning and you're up and you're responding right back. And it's because you're always grinding it out. And, you know, it shows in regards to the work. It shows in regards to you having multiple practices. It shows in regards to the respect that you have in this industry. I wanted to circle back. You mentioned book earlier. If anyone is, you know, well equipped to create a book about private practice, you definitely are the person. Recently, you wrote a book, Play Chess, Not Checkers, The Practical Guide to a Warm Start, Your Dream Optometric Practice. You got to tell me about the title of this name, man. What's going on with this book? Where'd you get the name from? Let's talk about it.
The name is in two parts. So the Play Chess Not Checkers is one part, and in this particular book is the practical guide to warm start your dream optometric practice. The Play Chess Not Checkers part is the whole umbrella that I am working under to try and teach doctors how to maneuver in this eye care industry. This is a big business endeavor that we're in. And if you think small and you operate small, you're going to get eaten up. You're going to, there are other people out here, and it's a lot of money out here that is making big moves around you. So in chess and checkers, they are both played on the same board, right? But in checkers, you can only move one space at a time. But in chess, you can skip all the way across the board if you got the right piece. So the issue is, a lot of times, a lot of doctors are out here playing checkers, and big industry is around you playing chess. And if you don't know the moves, and if you don't play the right game on the same board in the same space, you're going to be in trouble. You're going to lose that battle. So my goal is to take all the knowledge that I've learned and try and pour it into books, consulting, podcasts, whatever I can to try and educate others. Now, I'm not coming from a perspective of I know it all, but I know enough to share. And if I can share a little bit and it helps somebody else a little bit, then it was worthwhile to put down and to educate and share that knowledge. And as I grow and I learn more, I'm going to write more books and I'm going to do more things to educate. So I can see myself writing another book 5 years from now. I'll have a different perspective and I'll have more information that I would have learned. And that's what the next book would come from. So I definitely want doctors out there to warm start your practice. Not cold start, but warm start your practice.
Whoa. Hold on. I always hear cold start, but no one's ever said warm start. You got to tell me, what does warm start mean?
So a cold start practice is one that starts from scratch with no patients, no buildup. A warm start is when you get some momentum going before you start, so that you're trying to be successful right out the gate. You want to be able to be financially viable early on. A cold start practice, it's going to take you a really long time to be in the black. You know, you want to be able to start warm, in which you have some marketing materials ready to go. You've made some smart purchases with your equipment, with your frames. You've made some educated decisions as opposed to staff and the hours you're going to be open, et cetera, just so that you make money right away. You know, you find a way to do that, because if not, this business is very unforgiving. I mean, you can't just open your practice and think that if I just open my practice and I open my doors, people are going to run in here and give me money. That is not the case. There's too much big business around us, and there's too much commercial and private equity out here to think that you're going to be able to do that. So without some sort of knowledge or some sort of help, you're gonna have a tough time succeeding in this business. So I definitely want more doctors to focus on starting warm and finding their niche, so that they can have that great and successful career that we all look and hope for.
Wow. Okay. That makes perfect sense now. I mean, shoot, I want to do a warm start instead of a cold start.
Yeah. Everybody.
So, you know, the book is pretty phenomenal. I had the privilege and the honor of actually reading this book ahead of time. And let me just tell you, it really blew my mind, because a lot of stuff that was in this book, well, actually everything that was in this book, I did not learn in school. So just reading the book gave me a great overview over just how to really open up a practice warm. And the book, the way you laid it out is just, you know, phenomenal. I love how you took it in three sections. You know, you started with the amateur, which is arrange your pieces. Then you went to the middle game, make your moves. And then you jumped into the end game, checkmate. I don't want you to give everything, but let's just kind of go through each one of these sections and just highlight the main things or things that you feel like are important, so that our listeners can also purchase the book, but be able to get a good overview of everything as well.
Okay. Well, like in life and in chess, there's different sections and there's different segments to the game. And in the beginning, there are things you need to do in the beginning that will then benefit you in the end. So early on, you just have to figure out, is opening warm the best decision for me? And I think that is the most critical thing that doctors have to ask themselves the right questions, because being in private practice can be the end goal you want, but that does not mean opening warm is the way to achieve that end goal of private practice. You can, for one, buy a practice from somebody else. This is the number one thing I would suggest any doctor do. If you can find a practice that you like, I would 100% tell you to buy somebody else's practice before deciding to open a warm, cold, anything. Buying somebody else's practice and revenue and cash flow is a much better decision than trying to go through it this way. Now, there are going to be practices for sale. The question is, should you buy that one? And I would tell you, I would rather you buy an ugly, busy practice than a pretty slow practice, because you can make a practice pretty in a weekend with some paint and some art and changing the flooring, but you cannot make a practice busy in a weekend. So look out there and look for a busy practice that, if it's pretty, that's a plus. But if it's not pretty, don't worry about it, because you can make it pretty. And then if you can't find a practice in the area that you would like to be in, and then I would tell you, look to partner with somebody. You know what? The most successful optometrists in the country are usually in multi-doctor practices. The reason being that one OCT payment is split amongst two or three doctors. So they are a lot that they can make that machine be more profitable earlier and quicker. Then if you're sick or you need to be off, you have coverage right away built in. So looking to partner. So look and see if you can find another doctor that needs to grow, has some room to grow, wants to bring on an associate, and then ask them to try and become a partner. And if you can find somebody that you mesh really well with, that's where I would really be my second option before even thinking of opening warm.
So let me ask you this then, Dr. Ramsey. Do you regret opening the way that you did? Do you think you should have looked more for a partnership or purchase a practice?
I looked for a practice, and there wasn't any that were in the area that I wanted to be for sale. There were a few that were for sale, but they weren't grossing enough and netting enough to make sense for the money they wanted when I was looking. So there wasn't anything viable for me in the area that I was actually trying to stay in. So maybe looking at it now, would I have expanded my search a little bit more? I probably would have expanded it, but I was kind of stuck on a particular area. And looking back, I probably wouldn't have been so stuck. I would have moved even 10 minutes out of that comfort zone that I was looking for, and maybe have done a little bit more digging and looking for a practice. But right now, thinking of the practices that I looked at and they were available, there wasn't one that I would. The partner, I looked, but there wasn't anybody that was looking to partner. Even since I have opened this practice, there hasn't really been anybody that brought in an associate in my area. So that wasn't really a viable option for me being in South Florida. A lot of the practices are very smaller practices in South Florida because there's so much competition. Those were not options that were available for me. But my situation may not be everybody else's. So there's a lot of doctors that they do have options of buying in or buying somebody out. And I would tell them to look at that option first before you go down the road of trying to open cold or warm.
Gotcha.
So the last thing I would say in this beginning phase would be maybe looking to start in a commercial setting and then transferring those patient records over to a private practice after about 2 or 3 years. Now, not all commercial settings, you own the charts. So I would tell a doctor, make sure if you're signing a lease, look for ones in which you own the chart. So if you work for another doctor, you don't own the charts. That doctor owns the charts. So unless you sign the lease with the commercial space, the doctor owns the charts. Or if you are an employee of that commercial setting, then most likely that commercial place owns the charts as well. They'll have an MD usually over the eye exam portion, and they would be the one that owns the charts. So if you could find a place where you own the charts and you own the phone number, you own the email addresses, and you own the EHR and the credit card machine, if you had that control there, then you could move that anywhere. And the way you'll know if you control it is if you pay the bill. If somebody else pays the bill, you do not control it.
That's a very easy way to realize it.
Very easy. People would be like, I don't know, I'm in a commercial place. I don't know, can I take this EHR? If you've never paid a bill for any of those things, then no, you do not own it. So and you know, staying in that setting for 2 or 3 years, you want to at least see the patient 2 times in that setting. Then they kind of build a connection with you more than the setting. You know what I mean? If they've only seen you 1 time, they're not really your patient. They're the patient of the setting that you're at. They've seen you 2 or 3 times, then all of a sudden you are their doctor. And then if you move, you're more likely to get that doctor, that patient to move with you. Look in there. Now, if you've exhausted those 3 things and there is nowhere to buy, nobody to become a partner with, and there isn't a place where you can do the charts and own the charts and you want to start, then you go. And the reason I tell doctors that is because eventually you're going to be second guessing yourself. When you open a private practice and you open warm a year, year and a half in, you're going to be hitting yourself against the wall and being like, what did I do? And if you know that this was the only way this could work and the only way you could have the autonomy you were looking for in a private practice setting, it'll calm you down a lot quicker and allow you to be like, okay, I got it. This was the plan. I knew this was going to happen, blah, blah, blah. And then you kind of fight your way through until you make it on the other side. So once you've asked yourself those appropriate questions, it'll make it much easier for you. And then you'll have the confidence that you made the right decision.
Gotcha. So yeah, making a decision is very key. And you hit some main points that I really love. You know, in this beginning section, the amateur, outside of that making the decision area, there was another area that really stood out to me. And that was really trademarks and copyrights. Can you just give me a little bit of information in regards to that? Because again, they're not teaching this stuff in the school system. So it's very important for our listeners and you know, whether they're millennial doctors, student doctors, or even seasoned doctors that may be considering opening their practice, I think this is an area that's very important. I would love to touch on it and get your expertise opinion about.
Well, you're asking the million-dollar question, Daryl. Trademarks was the reason I even wrote the book. Before opening, I have read every single optometry, private practice, business management book on the market, and not a single one of them mentioned trademarks. So when I opened my practice, I got the domain, I got my S Corp, I got my website, I got all my social media handles. And in my head, I thought I was good to go. Lo and behold, VSP actually had the trademark for Iconic. And my practice used to be called Iconic Eye Care. It was I-C-N-O-I-C. And VSP had the trademark for Iconic spelled E-Y-E-C-O-N-I-C. So I learned that not just the way a word looks, but how it sounds phonetically is what you own when you own a trademark.
Oh, wow.
I was actually forced to change the name of my practice after I had been credentialed with VSP. I had been a VSP provider for years, and they decided to utilize their trademark. And I had to put my big boy pants on and be like, okay. I was a little mad at first, but then I had to say to myself, okay, I learned a life lesson here. And now instead of Iconic Eye Care, we are now Socialite Vision. And I actually own the trademark to Socialite Vision. And I spent over a year and a half fighting to get a trademark. And I wasn't going to change my business until I got a trademark because I didn't want to have that happen to me again. And then when I was done with that, I decided, you know what? If I read all the books on the market twice and none of them mention trademarking, then that means there's a niche out there that needs to be written and needs to be talked about. So I said, you know what? Why don't I write a book? Instead of telling somebody else they should write it, why don't I sit down on my computer and write it myself and see if I can help somebody else with the knowledge and the stuff that I learned. And if I can help somebody else avoid the headache that I had to go through, then I think that's a value to a book and to somebody else. So I wrote the chapter on trademarks, and I wrote the rest of the book just telling people go out there and make sure if you're going to be stuck on a business that you want to trademark it. If you've done anything besides like your last name Eye Care or last name with Vision on the end, you probably need to be concerned that another company out there could have the trademark. And just because you've had the name for 10, 20 years, does not mean they can't decide to utilize their trademark and say that they want you to change it. Go out there and make sure that you can trademark your name. If you're listening to this right now and your name isn't trademarked, I would tell you to go out there and try and get that trademark for the name of your business to secure yourself.
Wow. I mean, that's some powerful stuff there, man. And, you know, I'll be upfront with you. I like your previous name, but let's keep it real, man. Socialite Vision actually matches your swag a tad bit better, man.
It does. You know what? It does. I like it. I'm very happy with the name now. So it actually embodies me a little bit better than the other names. So that's why, you know what? I was mad at the time because it cost me thousands of dollars to change my name, tens of thousands of dollars. But now I'm happy with the end result. And, you know, I have a trademark that's issued that nobody can infringe on for myself. It was almost like a starting over, to be honest with you, because I put so much effort and energy into marketing the first name when you first opened. And now I had to really hit the reset button and start over and remarket a whole new name. So what I did was I used what I learned the first time and then said, you know what? This is a reset. So what would I do with the information that I know now if I had it when I first opened? And that's really what I've been doing for the past year is pretty much hit the reset button on the name and the marketing and then utilizing the skills and the stuff that I've learned along the way to remarket the new name and to get the new name out there. And continue to grind and grow it as big as I can.
So let's actually move into the middle game. Make your moves. You're talking about grinding. You probably the person that I know that has the biggest grind outside of myself, man. I feel like we match each other on that.
Yeah.
I want to talk about this part a little bit more, in particular the branding aspect of when it comes to having a practice and also just the marketing. I mean, one thing that I really love that you actually put me on to, which really changed my life over the last year, was a book by Damon John, The Power of Being Broke.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, reading that book, I mean, there's some things in there that I've been doing my entire life, but actually reading it and seeing these successful business people, how they really hustle because of, you know, that fear of being broke or not having what you want. I mean, like, it really, really changed my life. And I could clearly see you actually did that over the last year when you had a reset and restart. So let's talk about the middle game and make your move section a little bit more in detail.
Well, yeah, man, that Power of Being Broke book, I'm happy you liked it. It teaches you something, you know what I mean? Because the hustle and grind that you do when you don't have a big access to a whole bunch of cash and capital, because when I opened, I had a loan, you know, money for marketing and all that stuff. And then when you had to change your name in the middle of a week that you didn't plan on, I didn't have $50,000 in marketing money to reset. So I had to learn how would I market on a smaller budget than I did when I first opened. And the first thing I did was I networked across. A lot of people try to network up. So they try to reach up to somebody that they perceive as above them and try and get them to pull them up to where they're at. And I don't really do that too much. I network with people that I feel is right on my level, it's right at my fingertips. And we hustle together. So I exchanged services. I did things so that I could be able to allow my office to benefit and thrive. And then this time, the first time around, I feel like I just try to put all this money into marketing. But where I messed up is that I didn't have a concrete brand. And if you have a concrete brand, you don't have to market as much because the customer really understands what you're about, understands what your business stands for. So that when people are talking about your business, they are describing it accurately because you've given them an actual solidified brand that they can hold on to and they can understand. You know, most of the biggest brands in any industry, you'll see, do not really market that much. You don't really see commercials for Rolls-Royce very often because their brand, or Ferrari, their brand is so solidified that they no longer have to do the same marketing because they are the kingpins in those industries. So this time around, I said, you know what? I am going to define my brand and then market that brand instead of skipping over the step to hustle and just try to get the name out there to make a dollar. I'm going to slow down, define my brand, make sure I clearly understand it, my patient and consumer clearly understands it, and then I'm going to be marketing that brand. And I think that's where a lot of doctors I see the misstep is that they do not have a clearly defined brand. They don't have a consistent image, and they don't have a consistent process in their office and a consistent brand that they're pushing out into the community. If you ask 10 people to describe their office, they may describe it totally differently. And that's because the brand is not consistent.
Gotcha. Makes perfect sense. You know, one thing I really love that you just mentioned that I really want to highlight even more is just that whole concept of how you network. Instead of, you know, trying to get help from someone up above, you know, networking with someone across makes more sense because both of you actually do truly have that hustle spirit and you both are going after the same thing. I mean, that's just ingenious there. So I greatly appreciate you dropping that gem for us. One other thing I wanted to touch on in this section was just the build out. You know, a lot of folks are confused or unaware or have no idea how much they should invest in the build out, what they should look for when they're going about the build out. If you could just elaborate on that a little bit more as well, Dr. Ramsey.
So when I was looking for my space, the key thing I looked for was a space that required the least amount of build out, because the build out is it's a leased space, it's a rental. So I wasn't trying to put in $100,000 into a space I didn't own. Now, if you were buying this space from the beginning, then I see the need, or I don't mind putting in money into the walls and into fixtures that you're gonna leave there. But because it was a rental, I spent months looking for a space that required the least amount of build out, and I was actually able to do minimal construction on the space. I really just had to knock down two walls and open it up to make the optical. And the rest of the rooms, for the exam rooms, contact lens, pre-testing, break room, bathrooms, were already built. And the floors was great and the walls were great. So I literally had minimal build out. And that's where I would tell you that look for a space that you don't have to put that much cash and capital into a build out unless you own the space. Now, when you're looking for a space, I would tell the doctor, you know, now being in my space for almost 4 years now, I don't know if you necessarily need to be class A real estate, first floor with street frontage views, because most patients found me from having the actual address and putting it in a GPS and then calling us on the phone to get directions exactly how to get there. So you could be on the second floor of a medical office space or in the back of an office space building and probably reduce your cost for rent and then get the same amount of revenue in. So looking for a great space that you can work with as is or with minimal build out cost, and then finding something that has great terms and don't be so concerned about, you know, the way it looks from the outside or the exact location of it, would be my suggestion for anybody that's listening.
Gotcha. There's one other area actually in this section that I really want to touch on, because I've got to experience this with you firsthand. I don't know if you guys have ever been at Vision Expo and roamed a showroom floor with Dr. Adam Ramsey, but when he's out there and he's talking to these vendors, whether it's equipment or frame folks, he hustles them. He works them. I mean, by the time he's done having a conversation with them, they basically take a big bag, throw all the frames in there, and just say, here, take it. You know, I mean, this guy knows how to hustle folks for sure. Matter of fact, I was with him one time and he almost got a free, what was it, OCT? Was it OCT that they were going to give you?
Yeah, man. Oh, man. I wouldn't say it's a hustle. I wouldn't use that exact word. But I would say it's more along the lines of negotiated, knowing your worth.
Come on, Dr. Ramsey. Talk that talk, man.
Come on, man. You just got to know your worth. At the end of the day, you want to really know your industry, know your business, know the competitors, know what the other costs are for these products and services, and then be smart when you're making your purchases, because you don't make money when you sell frames. You make money when you buy them, because if you don't buy them right, no matter what you try to sell them at, you'll never make money. So you really got to be selective when you're purchasing and knowing, okay, this frame looks very similar to that frame, but it's half the price, and I can also get the same credibility and the same look from a different manufacturer. Or you work. That's why I go to Vision Expo. I go to East and West every year since I graduated, and you get to touch and feel these frames and look at all the equipment and look at all the stuff at the same time and compare and get the best value for yourself, because that's how you make money. It's not how much money you make. It's how much you keep. So if you buy stuff at the wrong price points, it'll be very hard for you to be financially successful later on. So as you're going, do the research, do the legwork, look at it, understand the business that you're jumping into. And then when you do that, you'll be able to negotiate with these vendors and get fair terms. Because I'm building, you know, you're building relationships and partnerships with all these companies. You know, once you start bringing in a frame or you use a buy a piece of equipment, it's like a marriage with these people. So, you know, be smart. Take your time before you just jump in and make sure that you're giving yourself the best value. So that now you are profitable with that company and with that brand, and that'll help you want to keep doing business with them. Because if you don't make money and they feel like they got over on you, well, that'll be the last time you buy from them. So you really want to work with a company that you're going to have a long-term relationship with. And once you break it down to them like that, like, hey, I might want them a little cheaper this time, but if I'm buying frames for you for the next 4 years, it'll be better for both of us. So it's just about really knowing your industry and knowing what you're doing and just taking your time in the purchasing process.
Gotcha. So end game, checkmate. Let's talk about it.
All right. So the last thing you want to do is this open house, man. You do all this legwork. You're doing all the different things to get open. This is the fun part. You know, this is the part where you get to invite all your family and friends. And this is one part where people try to go cheap. And I would say the opposite. I would go big as I can. Because when you get an invite to an open house, people are more apt to actually show up and attend because they want to see it's brand new and people are nosy. They want to come in and check it out. So this is when you want to actually spend the most amount of money. I actually had multiple open houses. So I had an open house for family and friends. And then I had an industry open house with optometrists, opticians, vendors, the people that did the construction, all that. So I had two separate open houses to thank both groups and to do my ribbon cuttings and invite all my neighbors and all the people that were in the plaza with me attended. And, you know, I just really had some fun with it. But when you're there, you're on the clock. You ain't off the clock. You're on the clock. So everybody that comes through there needs to either make an appointment or buy a product. That's it. If you can drive to my open house, you can drive here for an eye exam. So while they're there and the excitement is flowing and the champagne is going, you're either booking an appointment or you buying these sunglasses today.
I love it.
So and while you're there, just have some fun with it, man. Just try and enjoy the experience. Slow down and enjoy it. You know, make sure that you're ready and prepared. And then come there with some fun, and that's how you get the ball rolling. You know, because for that first couple of months, those family, friends, neighbors, that initial push that you got is what's going to allow you to open warm in that beginning. And then after that, use the momentum from that and the referrals continue to flow from there.
Well, you've definitely motivated me to want to write a book. And I'm pretty sure after hearing this, a lot of our other colleagues are going to be interested in doing the same thing. I want to just touch briefly on just the process. I mean, how did you get started? Which publishing platform did you use? Was this a long yearly process or was it something that was pretty straightforward?
It doesn't take long to write a book. It takes long for people to sit down and actually do it, I would say. And then you have to go through the editing and different things. So it took me about a year to write it. That's because I was starting and stopping with the book. The great thing is that Amazon has a really great publishing platform. Amazon started from books, so they actually can help you with the publishing aspect. It's called Kindle Direct Publishing, and they'll allow you to upload the ebook to their site, and then you can even buy the books, the printed books from Amazon, and then ship them yourself. So you can do all that really through Amazon. Amazon has a really great platform, and then beyond that, you can use another website called Smash Words, and that one will allow you to upload the ebook to iBooks and to Barnes and Nobles and to other platforms that where you can sell your books there. So it actually is a pretty straightforward process. It's just really about sitting down and saying, you know, what do I have to say, and what different concepts or ideas do I have that I want to get out, and just start typing, man. It really can happen. It's just about spending some time behind that computer and just typing.
So what has been like the biggest surprise since you released your book? I mean, what's the feedback been? What's been the biggest surprise? I mean, hell, how have you been feeling since you actually seen a physical copy of something that you wrote?
It's been really incredible to actually see the actual printed book. I never thought that I would even be an author. It was not even on my list of things to do. So when I look back and think about the kid that was terrible at English and terrible at grammar and terrible at spelling, and to look back and now I'm an author and nobody can take that away from me, you know, I'll always be a published author. That is something that's really, truly amazing for me. I'm really happy, and I'm happy about the content that I put out. What I'm really shocked about is how many people ask me for an audiobook. I was coming out here ready to do the ebook and the printed book, and I was ready to roll. And the first question I got is, when's the audiobook coming out? And I'm like, man, I didn't even think about that. And people were like, you know, they were like, your personality is big, just like Michelle Obama's personality was big. So when people listen to her, they can actually hear the words a little bit better and it conveys a message better. So I'm in the process of trying to record an audiobook. So I'm learning all this stuff. So I'm learning how to do an ebook. I learned how to do a printed book. I guess now I'm going to learn how to do an audiobook and be able to put it out. It's all a life lesson. It's something I never really wished for or asked for, but it kind of came, and I'm kind of happy about it. It's just a different avenue, a different media to be successful and to find your own little niche. You know, everybody's going to have their own definition of success, and you really got to figure your own way through it. So I just been so happy that people have been buying the book and they have been liking the book and people have been liking the content and what I put in there, and everybody's taking away different nuggets from the book and is finding little things in there of value for themselves. It's a quick, easy read. You know, you can read the book in 2 hours if you sit down and concentrate. So people have been being able to read the book quickly and take something away right away from it. I also have an appendix in the back where I have a list of a lot of other services and companies that I've used. I have no affiliation with any of the companies, no financial interest in any of the companies I listed, but it was just ones that I used. And I figured if I could help you guys at any way open up Warm, then I would. And then I would also say there are a lot of other optometry business books on the market. This book, I designed it to fill a niche of helping people go from zero to open. There are a lot of books on the market that's going to help you after you open to think bigger and to grow your business and to think outside of the box and to expand. What was missing was a book that helped you go from, I'm an optometry student, I am a new graduate, I work in a commercial setting, and I want to get into actual private practice. And being able to bridge that gap is what was missing in the market after I've read all the stuff and looked, and I know most of the authors that have written those books, and that was missing. So I said, you know what? If that's missing, then why don't you just write it? You do it yourself. You just did it. And I could have waited until I had it all perfect and my business was perfect and I was perfect, but I was like, no, I'm going to give the information right now in the moment and let people learn about how to open a business and give them the information that I know right now and today. Not coming from a perfect place, not a perfect doctor, not a perfect business owner, but I have a voice and I have something that I want to say, and I feel like people can learn from it. And if this book allows people to be a little bit more profitable, be open a little bit sooner, have sleep a little better at night, then I feel like it's of value. And for the price, I paid way more in my opportunity costs and all the consulting and all the stuff that I've done in over the years than the cost of the book. So that's where the biggest secrets and the best things are in, is in low cost books. And we just have to open them and read them, or as I'm learning, listen to them, I guess.
So where can everyone find the book? Where can they buy the book? How much is the book? Where can they get it?
So right now you can go on Amazon and type in Play Chestnut Checkers, The Practical Guide to Warm Start Your Dream Optometric Practice. If you put my name in, it'll also Adam Ramsey would also pull it up. You can also go to my website, playchestnutcheckers.net, and you will be able to download the book from there and purchase printed copies. the Audible book will be available as soon as I can get it out there. But right now, you'll be able to purchase the printed from playchestnotcheckers.net, and you will be able to download the book from there as well, or from Amazon, or any of the usual suspects of download locations. You will be able to download the book and order the printed copy.
And we'll also have a link in a companion post, so you guys can check out that link, click it, make sure you support Dr. Adam Ramsey. You know, he's a man that's always helping everyone out in the industry, whether it's advice, whether it's tips, whether it's, you know, just needing someone's, needing a shoulder to lean on. Dr. Adam Ramsey is always there for us. So you guys make sure you check it out. Dr. Ramsey, what's next, man? I mean, you wrote a book, you own a private practice, you're taking over the world, man. You're going to run for president or what?
Nah, I can't run for president. I wasn't born in this country, so I can't. That's one thing. But I can run for governor, though. So, I mean, I could, my limit is governor, but I could definitely do that. You know what? I always have dreams and hopes and aspirations, but what I've learned in this business is that you never know what's going to happen. I leave myself open to opportunities. I'm a praying guy, you know. I believe in God, and God has really opened doors. And I feel like I would limit myself if I knew where God was going to take me. I don't think I would ever write the story big enough. And so right now I'm just leaving myself open to what God has in store. And if you are, you know, what they say, luck is when preparation meets opportunity. So I stay prepared for the opportunity. So someday somebody's going to say Dr. Adam Ramsey was lucky. And what they don't know is the hustle and grind that you put in the dark is what shines in the light. So there's some more big things coming. And I'm excited for when I'm able to release it and put it all out, man. I've been blessed this whole career I've had and my whole life. And, you know, favor ain't fair. And I keep on trying to keep that unfair advantage.
Yeah, I know that's right. Amen, my brother. Yeah. So check it out, Dr. Ramsey. If anybody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way for someone to reach out to you to connect?
I am on DrAdamRamsey.com, also on Facebook and on Instagram and on YouTube. And I would say LinkedIn. I have quite a few people that I connect with on LinkedIn. You can find me on all those social media platforms and my website, DrAdamRamsey.com. You can message me on there. I use it pretty regularly. So you can, anywhere you type me, type my name in, I pop up. I love it. Just download the book, read it, give it to a friend, share. Hopefully some students, some young doctors can get a hold of the book. And if it can help them and give them some peace of mind, then it was worth the energy and effort I put into to getting that out there to the people, man. I'm really happy to be on your show, you and Jen. I know she couldn't join us today, but I definitely was happy to be on here. I'm thankful for the opportunity. I don't take this lightly, man. You guys have a great platform. You've worked so well. And I'm appreciative of the opportunity to have and speak to your audience. I love it, man. Keep up the good work. And keep the hustle and grind, man. You inspire me, man. You make me want to be better every time I want to slack off. I know Daryl is up before me, because when I text you, you up. And when you texted me, sometimes you waking me up, but I can answer the text. That means Daryl was up before me. If he could text this, and that means he was up before me. So I got to set my alarm 30 minutes sooner because you pushing me to be better, man. So I definitely appreciate that, man. I'm excited for what the future has. For Defocus, what the future has for me, and for what me and you do together in the future.
Likewise, man. Again, Dr. Adam Ramsey, we appreciate having you on the show. Friends, family, colleagues, get out, get the book, Play Chess, Not Checkers, The Practical Guide to Warm Start Your Dream Optometric Practice. Click the link in the companion post and make sure you get that book. Dr. Ramsey, thank you again. You have a great day, man.
All right, thanks, man.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.